Hi, this is Mike Essen. We have a very special guest with us today. His name is Richard Viguerie. He is a chairman of ConservativeHQ.com and author of Takeover, the 100-Year War for the Soul of the GOP and How Conservatives Can Finally Win It. We're going to talk today about the all-time great conservatives. As a conservative who's interviewing a conservative icon, I think like all-time great football players, all-time great movies, we should talk about where our roots came from. Mr. Viguerie, welcome to the Mike Essen Show. Great to have you too. I'm gonna go down the list, Mr. Viguerie, and you're gonna introduce all the. You're gonna give a bio of all the candidates. Good. You're gonna give a bio of the candidates of my list. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Mike, I'm having a hard time hearing you. I think it's cutting out. Could you say it again, please?
I'm gonna give you the list, and you're gonna give a bio of all my candidates. Okay. William F. Buckley Jr., please tell my audience about him.
Well, Bill Buckley, as a young man, while still at Yale, wrote a book that maybe could be said to have launched the modern-day conservative movement, God and Man at Yale. And from that fame, he launched a few years later the most important conservative publication of my lifetime, a very long time, National Review in 1955. I would say that he was the indispensable person in the modern day conservative movement. If there had been no Bill Buckley, I'm not sure we would recognize the conservative movement today. It would look very, very different. He provided not only intellectual leadership for the movement, but he was a true leader that organized meetings, called people together, provided leadership, he was just truly indispensable. There are other people very important that we'll talk about in a few minutes, but I would say he was the one key person that made it all come together.
Barry Goldwater.
Barry Goldwater, we could say that we had two founding fathers of the conservative movement. Bill Buckley was the intellectual founder of the conservative movement and our number one leader. Barry Goldwater was our political leader, and he was more of a spokesman for our cause. When he was elected in 1952 as a junior senator from Arizona, he hit the stage nationally very strong, very quickly. Most all conservatives became aware of him. And in 1960, when he authored a book called The Conscience of a Conservative, ghostwritten by a friend of mine, and his son is a dear friend today, Brett Bozell, it just electrified the conservative movement, and it changed American politics forever. And if readers have not read The Conscience of a Conservative, they not only need to read it, but read it and reread it, because those two people, Bill Buckley, the intellectual, and Barry Goldwater, the political, launched the conservative movement as we know it today.
Milton Friedman.
Milton Friedman was an intellectual giant, of course, best economist of the 20th century, and many of Ronald Reagan's ideas that he articulated, that he implemented, came from Milton Friedman, and his wife Rose was a true partner with him, and he was able to discuss economic issues in a way that the average person, the layman, could understand. It seems like most economists talk in a way that no one else except economists can understand. But Milton Friedman was exceedingly articulate and was able to present our ideas in a way that it changed many, many people's minds when they heard how he presented it in such an articulate way. And he, again, was a leader. He just didn't write about things. He produced movies and videos, and highly successful. I suspect he's the most important economist, maybe since Adam Smith, and we had some very good economists, von Mises, Hayek, and others. But Milton Friedman was able to take economic principles founded on liberty and freedom and articulate them to the average person in a way that few others could.
Ronald Reagan. The person who was on my show twice, Mr. Vigory, Phyllis Schlafly.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, Mike.
Someone who was on my show twice, Phyllis Schlafly.
Phyllis Schlafly, Phyllis is a dear friend, and she's 91 years old and going strong, and I will see her at the Republican convention next month, and I jokingly refer to myself as 003, which means I've been active at the national level of the conservative movement longer than every living conservative except two others. And 001, of course, is the grand lady of the conservative movement, Phyllis Schlafly. And Phyllis is a real Renaissance-type conservative. Most conservatives are identified with one aspect of liberty, our freedoms. Phyllis, though, covers the waterfront. She's an attorney, and she's a constitutional scholar. She's an expert on foreign policy, on cultural issues, economic issues. She really covers the waterfront, and again, she's a leader. I came late to realize that there's a big difference between a spokesperson and a leader. And it's not that one is better than the other. They just do different things. Barry Goldwater was not so much a leader as he was a spokesman for our cause. Bill Buckley was a spokesman and a leader. Phyllis Schlafly, again, a spokesperson and a leader. She organized meetings. I mean, without her, we would have had the Equal Rights Amendment, and men would have been going to women's bathrooms 35 years ago if it hadn't been for Phyllis Schlafly. So when we couldn't see a way effectively to challenge the Republican kingmakers, as she likes to refer to them, the Nelson Rockefellers of the world, she showed us how to beat them, how to engage them, and win. And she's went to her first Republican convention in 1948, and she's been going to everyone since then, and she'll be a major force to be reckoned with at the 2016 Republican Convention in Cleveland next month.
Jesse Helms.
Jesse Helms. Gosh, we're all so much in Jesse Helms' debt. I knew Jesse Helms. I knew him fairly well. He considered him a friend. He was first elected to the Senate in 1972. And in the 70s, quite frankly, it was tough going for us conservatives because we had, of course, gotten our head handed to us in 1964 with the Goldwater loss. And we had Nixon as president, and he was governing as liberal Democrat almost. And we didn't have a lot of leaders out there. And when Jesse Helms was elected to the Senate in 1972, he immediately began to provide that leadership. He formed an organization called the Congressional Club and began to provide leadership, not only in North Carolina, but throughout the country. And when Helms ran for re-election in 1978, we were just getting something started called the New Right. The New Right really kind of got started in the mid-70s. We used to meet at my home for breakfast, maybe 8, 10, 12 conservative leaders, people like Ed Fulber at the Heritage Foundation, Paul Wiry, Howard Phillips, Terry Dolan, Borden Blackwell, and others. And when Tom Ellis, the head of the Congressional Club, and the person who's probably primarily responsible for Jesse Helms' election, was in town, he would join us. And so we had this New Right, and we were not different than the old right in any significant way, certainly not ideologically, except we were operationally different. We would get up every morning thinking, what, 3, 4, 5 things can we do today to put the Democrats out of business? And Helms was our inside person. We had an inside and outside effort. The outside was people who I just mentioned, including myself and Phyllis and others. The inside, we had Jesse Helms as our primary person. We also had Paul Laxalt and Bob Dorn and other members of Phil Crane that would work with us and provide leadership. But the one in Congress that we relied on primarily was Jesse Helms. And when Helms ran for re-election in 1978, the left threw everything they could at him because he was such a key part of our movement. And they failed. He was re-elected. And if Helms had not been re-elected in 1978, I'm afraid it would have been very, very difficult for Ronald Reagan to have had the momentum to get the Republican nomination in 1980. So Helms was an integral part of Reagan's nomination and election in 1980.
Rush Limbaugh.
I'm sorry, who?
Rush Limbaugh.
Rush Limbaugh. Oh, wow. We don't have long enough to talk about Rush here. He's there would be no concerted movement today in 2016 worthy of the name if it weren't for Rush. I was there in the 1960s and 1970s when there was a darkness about the political landscape that was of biblical proportions. I wouldn't have been surprised, you know, to see frogs and locusts and fleas and flies. I mean, it was really, really tough. And we didn't have, Ronald Reagan as President of the United States. We didn't have talk radio. The internet, cable television, Fox, and all. But of all the new and alternative media out there, and by the way, there'd be no conservative movement without the new and alternative media because it allowed us a opportunity to go around the blockage that the left had on the microphones of this country. They controlled access to the microphones, whether it was ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, New York Times, Time Magazine, Washington Post, Associated Press, etc. And so I was fortunate to pioneer political ideological direct mail back in the 60s and the 70s, and that gave us one channel to go around. But it was a rather limited channel. But when Rush came on the scene in around 1987-88, it changed everything. And Rush is in a class by himself. He is providing leadership for our cause when we're
Mr. Vigory, I'm going to pick a dark horse candidate and
I'm
give.
Sorry, I didn't hear that again.
I'm going to pick a dark horse candidate, and then you're going to elaborate on my pick, okay?
Mike, you're breaking up. I can't hear you.
I'm going to pick a dark horse candidate, and you're going to elaborate on my pick, okay?
Mike, I'm sorry. I'm not.
Okay, I'll give you the candidate. Wayne LaPierre, my dark horse candidate. Please give his biography.
Oh, okay. Dark horse?
Wayne LaPierre. Yes.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Wayne has done phenomenal work for many, many years, decades now. And but of all the wonderful work that Wayne LaPierre has done for 20 plus years, his most important work, his best work, is ahead of him. And I think that's coming up here in 2016 and beyond. One of the problems conservatives have is we don't have the leadership, quite frankly, that the left has. We have very few leaders. As I mentioned, one of them, of course, is Rush Limbaugh. But at the very top level is Wayne LaPierre. And we're all counting on Wayne to be a major force for the cause of liberty and freedom in this 2016 election, because people commonly talk about, for the first time in our lifetime, the Supreme Court is on the ballot. Well, the Second Amendment is also on the ballot. If the Democrats win the White House in 2016, gun owners can be prepared to lose their Second Amendment rights. I think it won't be long before Hillary will be looking to abolish the Second Amendment. And we desperately need Wayne's leadership. Wayne is a very quiet person. Doesn't have a loud voice, but he speaks softly, but carries a very big rifle, very big stick, and we really, really are counting on Wayne to provide leadership and the muscle and the troops to bring the cause of liberty and freedom home successfully this November.
Mr. Vickery, before I ask you to give your website out, is there any names you think I left out that were pertinent?
Mike, I'm
Do you think I've left out any names that were pertinent? That was my list. Is there any names you'd like to add or subtract to my list, please?
Mike, I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Is there any names you'd like to add or subtract to my list?
Phyllis Schlafly and others, and we all stand on the shoulders of those first generation conservatives. Now we're probably in our fourth generation, and there's a lot more third generation conservatives, and more even many more fourth generation conservatives. But for whatever reason, the fourth generation, third generation didn't have the number of entrepreneurs that the second generation did. To this day, most conservative organizations are run and operated by people who were second generation conservatives. That would include Wayne LaPierre and Phyllis Schlafly and many, many others. The Heritage Foundation, started by Paul Wyrick and Ed Fulner, all second generation conservatives. So I say this because maybe there'll be some people listening to our conversation here that will want to provide leadership for the cause. And the left has literally tens of thousands of what I call third force, not third party, but third force organizations at the national, state, and local level. Think of all the environmental groups out there, the hundreds of environmental groups. We have half a dozen. Race-based organizations, social issue organizations, pro-abortion, same-sex marriage, etc. And so we have just a handful of those organizations, and many of them, quite frankly, have tired leadership. And so there's a big opportunity for conservatives to provide leadership at the local, state, and national level for our cause.
Mr. Vigory, it's been an absolute pleasure. Would you care to give the website out of your choice, please? Your website.
I did hear that.
Could you give out your website to my audience, please?
Yes. Thank you for asking, Mike. My website is conservativehq.com. HQ, of course, stands for headquarters. And the purpose of my website is to provide leadership for the conservative movement, to help get the conservative movement going in the right direction. If there are any number of tragedies that happen, like say the West Virginia flood, terrible disaster in West Virginia, or there other disasters out there, we don't talk about that. All that we do, we're very narrowly focused. We're focused on building, strengthening the conservative movement and advancing the cause of liberty, and that's all that we focus on there. And I was talking to my editor a few hours ago, and over the next few weeks we're going to be running a series of very important articles. We're running some this week on if you are not for Trump, you are for Hillary, and then we're going to go into a look at the conservative movement, talk about the failure of the Republican leaders, and talk about the failures of almost every major institution in America, such as organized religion, higher education, lower education, entertainment industry, the legal community, big business, Wall Street, the nonprofit community. Then, surprisingly, maybe to some people, we're going to look at the failures of the conservative leaders, and the failures and the shortcomings of the conservative movement. Because the conservatives, quite frankly, are not doing well. We're losing, and I'm afraid that we're on a path not just to lose the next big battle, but maybe to lose the war. And it's not preordained. We can still win, but we have to do things different. And so the last series of articles I'll be running over the coming weeks will deal with how conservatives go forward and prevail, how we win. But we have to operate different. Disruption has come to American business. We all are familiar with kids in their parents' basements or garages that are disrupting Fortune 500 companies. Well, this disruption is coming to American politics. In 5 years from now, American politics is going to look radically different than it does now. I haven't the foggiest idea what it's going to look like, but I know disruption is coming, and conservatives need to be prepared, because what we've been doing so far hasn't worked. We've been losing. And so I'm going to try to lay out a roadmap here in the coming weeks at conservativehq.com for conservatives. And so go to the website, sign up, and you'll get an email every day telling you what important stories we're focused on today. And if you want to keep up with the conservative movement, help advance the cause, and provide some leadership, conservativehq.com is the number one website that focuses on that.
Richard, thank you for being on my show so much. I appreciated it. Thank you so much.
Okay, my pleasure. I enjoyed our conversation. Thank you, my friend.
Me too. In closing, we had an icon today talk about where we came from. Don't forget it. This is my guest in signing off.